File 119, Senator Rummel.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's nice to be first on the agenda, and it's nice to start off with a very simple bill. The bill I have, first of all, I'd like to make sure that you have the A1 amendment, and I'd like to move that amendment.
We have it. Okay. It's in the folders.
It's in the folders?
Yep.
Okay.
Do you want to explain the A1 amendment?
The A1 amendment adds two words. On line, page 1, line 11, after the stricken word, we're going to reinstate the stricken word participant and add the words or party. So it will read commissioner and a participant or party.
Okay. I do believe we have a quorum present. And is there any questions about the amendment? Seeing none, I guess we can vote on the amendment. Senator Rummel moves the A1 amendment, and all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a very simple bill that is a technical one of those cleanup bills, and I'm going to turn the mic over to Mr. Burl Haar, who will explain why this technical change needs to be made.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Haar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator, and members of the committee. My name is Burl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. Commissioners at the Public Utilities Commission are subject to restrictions on ex parte communications with parties or individuals who have rights at stake in matters before them. The intent is to prohibit communications between commissioners and parties concerning material issues in disputed cases before the commission. The statutes and rules are geared for communications between commissioners and parties. However, the existing language in section 237.037 subdivision 1 is silent on parties. It makes no mention of parties. It refers to participants, but it does not mentioned parties, and as I said, all of the other references in statute and rules are geared towards parties. The fact that the party is not mentioned is a source of confusion. It should be in there, and that's really what this bill would do, simply clarify that the prohibitions in this section apply to parties, and that's basically the extent of the amendment, or the extent of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Haar. Any questions from the members? Senator Rummel, do you have anyone else that you wanted to testify today?
This is very simple.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would move that you...
You want to move this... what is the number on this one? 1019. Senator Rummel moves 1019 to be recommended pass.
Mr. Chair, maybe Council, Senator, could this be a consent calendar item? I would make that motion.
It's fine for me. Works for me.
Okay.
Put the vote on that.
Senator Spark moves that Senate File 1019 be referred to consent calendar on the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The motion is moved and as amended. And is passed to the floor in the consent calendar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Senator Rummel.
Thank you.
Next up, Senator Olsen, Senate File 1294.
Mr. Chair and members, this too is an agency bill, and I do have an A1 amendment that I would like to move at this time.
Do we have the copy of that?
Yeah.
Do you want to explain that?
Uh-uh.
No? Okay.
But I will hand it over to Mr. Haar.
Okay. Mr.
Chair,
Haar?
Members, maybe just a bit of background on the bill, and then I can explain how the amendment fits in. The bill is really a follow-up to laws that were passed in 2005 that required the commission to establish a system allowing for the submission and retrieval of documents over the internet. The commission and the department subsequently initiated a joint effort spearheaded by Catherine Hennessy, who's here today, to establish such a system. The system was implemented in the summer of 2006. The language of the bill would simply update statutory language to allow the commission to accept and to issue accept filings and issue orders and notices and basically allow electronic filing to occur. It's really just an updating of the language. The amendment is similar language, and it pertains to filings at the Department of Commerce for their conservation improvement program. The department receives a large number of filings for the conservation improvement program, and they'd like to be able to do that electronically and handle that business electronically to the extent the stakeholders are able to do that. So the amendment is very consistent with the other language of the bill. It simply expands it to include conservation improvement program. I should have had it in the original draft. It was my oversight that it was excluded.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is passed.
Thank you, and I will ask Mr. Haar to speak to the bill.
Mr. Chair, Haar. Members, as I say, the bill basically allows the commission to carry out electronic filing and to issue notices and orders and to allow electronic filing among parties as well. So it's mainly an updating of the language, as I say, of the statutes to make this more possible. It'll enhance our ability to use the electronic filing system that's currently in place. The proposed bill is actually a joint proposal. The commission brought it forward and did the initial sort of paperwork on it, but it's a joint proposal by the commission and the Department of Commerce. As I mentioned, Catherine Hennessy is here. Karen Santori, who was also very instrumental in developing the system, is here, as well as the Office of Administrative Hearings. Michael Lewis, who's an attorney with the Office of Administrative Hearings, is here as well. So it's really a joint petition by all three agencies because we all benefit from the system. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions. If you'd like, I can go through the various provisions of the bill if you'd like me to do that or answer questions you might have.
Then it's on the bill, so you're moving the bill until it
comes. Any further discussion? Senator Olsen, would you like to move this bill?
If it's okay to go on the consent calendar, mm-hmm. I would move that Senate file 1294 be moved to the floor on the consent calendar.
Senator Olsen moves that Senate file 1294 be recommended to pass and All right. Is there anyone in the audience that would be interested in testifying for or against this? Seeing none. Again, Senator Olsen moves that Senate file 1294 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor and the consent calendar. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, same sign. Okay, the motion passes. Senator Jungbauer, you have two bills. Which one did you want to do first, 1490?
Oh, sure, 1490 will take longer, so we might as well do the quick one at the end, you know?
Welcome.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate file 1490. I believe it's a simple bill, but it's one of those things I just don't understand the subtleties to, so that's why I have people wiser than myself gathering around me. It simply exempts personal property on a proposed electric generation peaking plant in the city of Elk River, exempts a personal property from taxes. So I'll let, I don't know who wants to go first.
I'll go first, Senator. Mr. Chair, I'm Rick Lancaster. I'm Vice President of Generation at Great River Energy. I do have a handout. If there's someone who could hand that out, I'd greatly appreciate it. We're a generation and transmission cooperative. Our headquarters is in Elk River. We're a not-for-profit co-op that provides electricity to 28 distribution cooperatives. We serve through our 28 co-ops 600,000 homes, businesses, and farms in Minnesota. There's about 1.5 million people who live in the homes that we serve. We have a need for about 150 megawatts of peaking capacity in the year 2009. We will be deficit in capacity that year at the rate at which we're growing. We grow about 3 or 4% a year, add about 15,000 new homes to our system every year. And this plant that we're talking about is the solution to that for us. We'd like to put it in Elk River. That's where our headquarters is right now. That's where we have an existing RDF-fired power plant. There's natural gas lines that are available. There's a very good transmission infrastructure there. And we have support from Sherburne County and from the city of Elk River for the needed personal property tax exemption. There's essentially three benefits to this project. The first one is improved power reliability. Peaking plants start quickly. They ramp up and down and allow us to serve our customers better. There are jobs. There's about 80 to 100 skilled craft jobs for a year of construction and three full-time operator positions. Also, as we add more wind power in the state to comply with the 25% renewable law that the legislature passed earlier this session, we need more of these peaking plants to be available to run when the wind is not blowing and when electric loads are high. So we're going to find, and we are continuing to find, increasing use for the peaking plants. They run primarily on natural gas. We do have fuel oil, or we would have fuel oil available in the winter if we're cut off on natural gas because it's needed for home heating. Cost of the project is about $100 million. These plants typically run less than 10% of the time, so just on the very hottest or very coldest days of the year. Very low emissions, both because they're natural gas and because they don't run very much. We would need a certificate of need from the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. We also need a site permit from the commission and an air permit from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So we're not asking for exemption from any of those processes, just from the personal property tax. The legislature has granted over 24 personal property tax exemptions for electric generating stations since 1994. Most have been for gas-fired peaking units, such as the one I'm talking about today. It makes us competitive with other states. Our surrounding states do not have tax on the personal property. We would still pay tax on the real property, on the land and on the buildings. This is a very important part of our decision in deciding to locate new facilities and build them in Minnesota. So that concludes my testimony, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lancaster.
Excuse me.
Any questions from the members for Mr. Lancaster? One question I do have. I'm sorry. Before you go on, you had said the amount of taxes that you're looking to get exempt on is personal property. What is that going to amount to? Is that the $310,000 that I'm seeing on this page two here?
The personal property tax on this that we're asking to be exempted from is all the personal property tax. I'm not sure what you're looking at.
Well, the dollar amount, is there a dollar amount that you're estimating that's going to be?
My memory is it's about twice the number that you just said.
Okay. About $600,000?
Yeah. What you're looking at a resolution that's from the county. And then there's also a similar amount that we would pay to the city for a period of 5 years to keep them whole for 5 years. So that's the approximate amount of the personal property that we pay to the county, the personal property tax that we pay to the county there. We would continue to pay real property tax of about $75,000.
Okay. All right. Senator Kolk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a small comment. I think I like this bill, and thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Jungbauer. I think what you said is, you know, we passed this renewable energy standard, and we all got behind that. And this is just a little piece of that puzzle. The peaking is going to be very important, and peaking equipment is going to be very important to make that renewable energy standard real and reliable and feasible. So, you know, I really like this, and anything we can do to help different utilities make that work better is I'm on board with. So thank you for bringing it up.
Mr. Lancaster? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lancaster. In the resolution, I'm just confused about property taxes again. And it says, whereas under the law, the project would pay approximately $1.06 million in its first year due to property taxes. Is that the relief you're looking for, that $1.06 million?
Yes.
And would that be, is that a one-time tax, or does that happen every year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, that happens every year that the plant is there.
And then you said you pay a tax, a personal tax, also to the city or the county?
That $1 million is the value of the personal property tax that we would have to pay without this bill to all the taxing jurisdictions that we're located in.
And then, Mr. Chair, one follow-up.
Yes.
Just Senator. For my ignorance, what is the difference between personal property taxes and real estate property taxes?
Mr. Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, there is a difference. Real property tax is the tax on the land and the buildings. There are certain entities in Minnesota who also have to pay personal property tax, and electric utilities are among them. And I've heard that gas pipelines and railroads are too, but the one I know about is electric utilities. And it's been in place a long time. Dates back to the old days when electric utilities were very highly regulated. Other states have done away with that tax as our business at the wholesale level, the level we operate at, has gotten more competitive. Mm-hmm. And we're able now to locate power plants in any state that don't have to be just in Minnesota. So the practice started in Minnesota in 1994 of granting personal property tax exemption, and they've mostly gone to natural gas-fired peaking plants like this one.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions from the members? Senator Jungbauer, did you want someone else to testify?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Gumphrey. I'm actually president of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades. We fully support this project. Not only is it going to provide good-paying jobs down into the future, but it's something that's valuably needed in the power industry, and we fully support this project. Also, I'd like to take the opportunity to put on a different hat. I'm actually a sitting council member for the city of Elk River, and as it was stated once before, it was fully supported by the city of Elk River, and be glad to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Any questions? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure how this works, if this could go into an energy bill or if this should travel on its own. We can get some
taxes, I believe, would be the next stop.
Okay, taxes on this one. All right. So I would move that Senate File 1490 be recommended to pass and moved on to Tax Committee.
Senator Bretner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, maybe you've answered these questions. I'm sorry I was presenting a bill at another committee, but did you state when you would start building this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bretner-Solon, the timeline for this is that we would start the permitting process as soon as the bill passes out of the legislature and signed into law. It takes about a year to go through the permitting process to get the certificate of need, the site permit from the Public Utilities Commission, and then the air permit from the PCA. Once that process is over, then we can start the construction process. So that would start in the spring or summer of next year of 2008. takes about a year to construct the plant. It would be online in May 1st of 2009.
Okay. And it's Mr. Lancaster?
It's Lancaster. There's a spelling error on the agenda.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Mr. Lancaster, can you tell me what the difference is between a peaking plant and a baseload plant?
Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Solin.
Have you had this discussion already? Okay.
Go ahead.
A peaking plant runs, this type of plant runs primarily on natural gas, and there will be fuel oil available if gas is not available. The general difference between a peaking plant and a baseload plant is that a peaking plant costs less to build. This plant is about a $100 million project, so it's not insignificant, but a baseload plant of the same size would be five times as much to build. A baseload plant, though, typically burns or uses a lower cost fuel, such as coal or nuclear fuel. And so in a baseload plant, you have a plant that's expensive to build, but it's low cost to operate because it has low cost fuel. Peaking plant uses a higher cost fuel, natural gas, but it's cheaper to build. So you don't want to run it a whole lot. You want to run it 5 or 10% of the time if it's a peaking plant. But you can afford to build more of them. They're good for reliability because they start quickly. You can ramp them up and down, and then you don't mind shutting them off and letting them sit there until they're needed again. Baseload plant, it costs so much to build. Once it's built, you want to run it and keep it running as much as you can to amortize the fixed costs of it over as many kilowatt hours as possible.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Lancaster, when the two are running, a base plant and a baseload plant and a peaking plant, the carbon emissions are similar?
Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Solin, it depends on the fuel. If the baseload plant is coal and the peaking plant is natural gas, they're both the same size, they're both running, the gas plant will emit about 60% of the carbon of the baseload plant. Natural gas is a hydrocarbon. You're burning both hydrogen and carbon. So you're making CO2 and you're making H2O as you burn them. However, over the course of a year, because the peaking plant runs much less, over the course of a year, it's going to emit a whole lot less CO2 than a baseload plant. It'll be, you know, a hundredth of the, or, you know, maybe not, maybe 5%, something like that, of the CO2 of a baseload plant.
Okay. And how difficult would it be, Mr. Chair and Mr. Lancaster, how difficult would it be to offset the carbon emissions from a peaking plant?
Mr. Lancaster.
As compared to, say, a baseload plant?
Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Solin, well, I think the difficulty would be the same. There'd be fewer of them to offset with a peaking plant. The concern I have about offsetting carbon emissions for this project is the timeline that we're on. We need this to be online in 2009 or we're deficit. We need these plants to be available to run when electric loads are high and when the wind's not blowing. I'm thinking of Senate File 192. There's a kind of an undefined process in there for acquiring offsets and some fairly strong language that says they have to be permanent, they have to be verifiable, so on. I'm really worried about that new process slowing this project down such that then it wouldn't be able to come online until after it's needed.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Lancaster, can you explain what that means? We need this to be online or we're in deficit.
Okay.
Mr.
Chair, Senator Prettner-Solin, I'm sorry. I'm using industry shorthand. We have a need in our system for electricity to serve our members. Right now we're about a 2,500 megawatt system. We have Cambridge Unit 2 that's under construction right now. It's a plant very similar to this, received a tax exemption as this one did. So then when that comes online, we'll be about 2,650 megawatts. Our 28-member co-ops have a need for electricity that will exceed that in 2009. I should also say there's a 15% reserve margin that we maintain in our industry in case a plant doesn't start on the day when you need it. And we get that reserve margin through contracts with other utilities. So in a very technical sense, I need to take that into account too. But we will exceed the demand on our system for electricity, including our reserve margin, in the summer of 2009. We're a summer peaking utility. That's when the demands on our system are the greatest.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lancaster, I've received some letters from some of the CEOs saying that in order to meet the renewable energy standard, that they're going to need more baseload or more peaking plants in order to meet that standard. Can you explain that concept to me? Why we would need more baseload or more peaking plants in order to meet the renewable energy standard?
Mr. Lancaster.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Sullen. We don't need more than what we would otherwise need. We need more than we have right now. So without the renewable energy standard, I think at Great River Energy, we were going to add a tremendous amount of wind power anyway. Let's assume that we weren't going to without the renewable energy standard. We would have plans to add power plants to serve our load. And we wouldn't need any more than that, than what we were already planning for. But I think what they're saying is the renewable energy standard, the 25% alone, is not going to solve our needs for future power supply. There needs to be supplemental power supply in addition to that. And these peaking plants are a good example of that because they can start quickly when the wind's not blowing. If the wind picks up, starts to blow again, these can ramp down or shut off quickly too, and there's no regrets about that.
Well, Mr. Chair, then that raises some other questions. Then if they don't need more base load, could they do even more renewable energy in order to meet growing need?
Mr. Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Sullen, there was a wind integration study that was done by the Public Utilities Commission, and it looked at that question of how much renewable can we add to the system, and with a particular emphasis on wind power, because that's the renewable technology that's cost-effective right now, in part because of the federal production tax credit, and in part for a lot of reasons. We have a lot of wind in this state. Because wind power is inherently variable, it ramps up and down. We have a system that is technically very complex. We're part of a grid that stretches from the Atlantic Ocean to the Rocky Mountains, from Florida to Saskatchewan, that's alternating at 60 cycles a second. As wind power ramps up and down, we have to follow that with other generation kind of in complementary fashion, so that as the wind goes up, the other generation's got to go down, and vice versa, regulating both voltage and frequency. And also building new transmission lines just to get to the wind power that's out there. So what the wind integration study was concerned about is you get to some point, and there are parts of Europe that are already at this point, I've heard, where you have so much wind on the system that you can't follow the fluctuations in frequency and voltage very well, and the system becomes unstable, or if the voltage drops or surges too much, it may not cause a power in people's homes, a power problem at home, but it will cause a power problem for industries who have big motors that can be damaged by the voltage being out of specification. So that's why you don't want to have too much wind power on the system, and that was the very issue that the wind integration study was looking at, and it found that 25% is probably where we want to get to.
Thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
I think one of the things that we're looking at as we move forward on this, the global warming mitigation that we're looking at, is this is going to be a back door to, coal-fired plants and things to have peaking plants instead. Are you going to be able to cut emissions further in those type of plants as well using natural gas, as they're talking about with the coal-fired plants? And they're talking about right now it's 20% to 30% off of these new models, but they could retrofit them. I think we've heard with the Big Stone that they could maybe bring it down further with new technology. Is that the case with these peaking plants?
Mr. Chair, the peaking plants, they emit so little CO2 compared to larger plants that are already in existence that if you wanted to reduce CO2 emissions, you wouldn't do it there. You'd go to an existing plant that's already emitting a lot of CO2. I think I testified in this committee before on Senate File 192, and there's technology under development called amine scrubbers, or maybe it'll use ammonia instead of amines. That's not commercially available yet, but will remove, when it is commercially available, 90% of the CO2 emissions from a coal plant. That's a big reduction in CO2 emissions. You can't get that kind of reduction from a peaking plant because they don't emit that much. You could, though, if it was a natural gas combined cycle plant. And what a combined cycle plant is, it's kind of in between a peaking plant and a baseload plant. It has a boiler that captures the waste heat off the back of the peaking plant. And make steam, and then you have a steam turbine that makes electricity. The peaking plant is a combustion turbine, like an aircraft engine, only much bigger. Those combined cycle plants, you could put scrubbers on them too, amine scrubbers or ammonia-based scrubbers or membrane-based scrubbers that remove the CO2, because they do run more because they're a higher capital cost plant. Once you build them, you want them to run. So those are the places you're going to look for, that we're going to look for as an industry to remove CO2 in the future. It's coal plants that are already emitting a lot of CO2, and it's combined cycle plants. We don't have any on our system, but if we built a new one, that would be a candidate for removal of CO2 just because it'll emit a lot of CO2. Peaking plants, you don't get much bang for the buck there because they don't emit much CO2.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I had a question in regards to, as you're in agreement with the county for the in-lieu payment, what's the amount and what's the time period on that?
Mr. Lancaster.
Okay. The county, I'm just trying to keep my mind straight here. Well, for the county, the in-lieu of payment is $310,000 a year for 5 years. And then there's I thought the amount for the city was different. It says $310,000. I think it might be $350,000, but they're in the same ballpark for the city and the county.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Carlson.
Mr. Lancaster, and Mr. Chair, Mr. Lancaster, are you saying that you have a scrubbing system that will scrub CO2? And what's the compound that comes out of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, we don't have this. This is now under development. We're participating in research at the Electric Power Research Institute, which is a industry research group located in Palo Alto, California. The way that the scrubber works, carbon dioxide gas is slightly acidic. It's an acid gas. And ammonia or ammonia-related compounds, which are called amines, are alkaline. So they will naturally absorb CO2 out of the flue gas stream. And so you take the flue gas, the way this works, and this is done on a small scale right now, and so we know it works. You take the flue gas out of a power plant, you run it through a column that has these amine or ammonia compounds sprinkling through it. They absorb the CO2. You collect the ammonia or amine at the bottom of the column. You heat that up, and that drives off the CO2. And you collect that, and then you've got pure CO2. And the concept is, no one is doing this on a large scale yet for power plant scale. Concept then is you take that CO2, you compress it, put it in a pipeline, and you ship it to, for example, an oil field where the CO2 can be used for enhanced oil recovery. It's injected down into the ground. It mixes with the oil. It allows you to pull more oil out. When the oil field is depleted, you stick the CO2 in the ground and you cap the field, and you've sequestered the CO2. You can also sequester it in saline aquifers and other domes underground. You know, I'm talking in the future here, but you know, the not too distant future for the way I believe we're going to capture CO2 in our industry in order to address the global warming problem.
So you'll, Mr. Chair, you will need to pipe it to an oil field to be able to sequester it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, you need to pipe it somewhere, either an oil field or some underground storage location where there's strata underground that will, or cap rock or an aquifer that will hold that CO2 underground.
Thank you, Mr. Lancaster. At this point, then, I think we can move on. I think everybody's ready. Senator Jungbauer renews his motion that Senate File 1490 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Thank you, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you,
one final bill from Senator Jungbauer, Senate File 252. I have a quick announcement. I have just had my added seventh grandchild to my family this afternoon, a little baby boy today, 138 this afternoon.
Congratulations.
After we're done here, I'm off to the hospital.
Okay.
So.
Nice.
Should be fun.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, I don't look
Chair,
like it.
You're
I know.
Old enough to be
I know.
Seven
I know.
Times over.
Sure.
I was just trying to figure that out.
Those non-traditional families. That's what happens, you know.
This is what happens after your birthday.
Yes.
We'll,
I told her to wait for one extra day. I didn't want to share. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, do we have somebody that can hand a handout out? We have a handout.
Yes, I think we do.
All right. Mr. Chair, members, actually, Senate File 252 is a extremely simple bill. That's extremely short. City of Elk River is asking for the designation of, through the state, of Energy City. And, you know, arguably today with energy on the horizon, every city in Minnesota would like the name Energy City. But the truth is, you can't have it. It's already been protected by the City of Elk River. They received the designation Energy City in 1997 when the Minnesota Environmental Initiative chose Elk River to act as a geographical focal point for demonstration of efficient renewable energy products and services. I have the mayor and the head of the Energy City Task Force. Is that what it is?
No, but I like that title.
Oh, well, you know, okay. Well, we have some people that can kind of go through things. Steve, see, I know Steve as a former building official with the City
That's
of
right.
Elk River,
exactly.
So as he gained new notoriety and a new title, I'm not sure how that works. But I want to tell you that Energy City has been there in Elk River for a long time. It's identified on the highways and actually protected at the state level with three different certificates of registration from the Minnesota Secretary of State's office. They have protected the words Energy City, the logo Elk River Energy City, and Elk River Energy City. So even if another city wants Energy City, they can't have it. Members, it's kind of like the icebox of the nation that just went to litigation. Somebody forgot to renew their trademark, and it went to litigation, and really what Elk River's trying to do is kind of finalize a deal at the state level here to protect against potential litigation and things down the road. So if this bill passes, it would simply protect the City of Elk River from having to spend money to enforce their name protection at the state level. I think it's that simple. If you guys have some questions, we can refer to our testifiers, the mayor, Stephanie Klinzing, or Steve Rolfe.
Mayor, would you like to add any comments to that?
Yeah, I definitely would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And committee members, we are here
I am Stephanie Klensing, mayor of the city of Elk River. I have been mayor of that wonderful city for the last 8 years. And this is a very serious issue for the city of Elk River. As you can tell by what Senator Jungbauer has already told you, we've gone to great lengths to protect the name Energy City. This is not something that we have taken on because we wanted to have something on our logo. It isn't because we wanted to have an Energy City parade every year. We've been very serious about energy issues for the last 10 years, and we know that the work that we've been doing is important, we believe, to the energy discussions that are going on in the state of Minnesota and also in the federal government, and that we can be a place where those discussions can take place. We are, in fact, have put together an energy expo that's happening on April 21st of this year. This is our first one. We expect it to be our first annual. We are starting out with the Energy Expo to educate and to get our own citizens and the people of the surrounding areas to understand energy efficiency issues, energy conservation issues. Paul Douglas, in fact, is our number one keynote speaker talking that day about global warming, starting at that very large point, and then during the day we'll bring it right down during the expo to the everyday house on how they can participate in energy conservation and energy efficiency. But we are very serious about this. We've worked on it for quite a long time now, and we believe that the designation of Energy City Minnesota will give us a wider, broader platform to show the world what a municipality plus a state and a county participation, along with all the other partners that we have. You just met Rick Lancaster from Great River Energy, who is also an Energy City Commissioner in the city of Elk River. We also have on our commission representatives from other electrical companies, energy companies, plus environmentalists and businesses that are involved in alternative energies and energy efficiency and conservation businesses, technologies. So we have really done, I believe, a great job of preparing the city of Elk River to have this designation, and we are asking for your support. Steve Rolfe, that's with us today, has been a staff member of the city of Elk River, was for almost 20 years, spearheaded the designation of the city of Elk River as Energy City from the Minnesota Environmental Initiative, which was where it came from in the first place. And today he is no longer a staff member of the city of Elk River, but he is a commission member for the Energy City Commission. So I'm going to let him just give you a snapshot of some of the things that we've been doing as Energy City for the last 10 years.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Rolfe, please identify yourself for the committee.
My name is Stephen Rolfe, and I'm an Energy City Commissioner. I want to start by saying I think, like what I heard from this committee, I have a deep concern for the environment. And a long time ago, I realized that it wasn't enough just to be an environmentalist. You had to work with industry. I heard Dennis Weaver, remember McLeod, the actor, speak one time, and he said, if we don't do something to improve our environment, I'm paraphrasing, but we're all going to die. And he says, in the next sentence, he said, if we wreck our economy to clean up the environment, we're all going to die. And that's really what Energy City is about. I think Rick Lancaster, that spoke for GRE earlier, the technology that they're looking at for, we need electricity. And they're figuring out technologies that will clean that production of that electricity up. The production and consumption of energy is the number one environmental issue facing our world today. And it's also one of the number one economic issues and a social issue. And that's really what Energy City is about. It's not environmentalists fighting industry. It's environmentalists and industry working together to find solutions to environmental problems that also make economic sense. And that's the only way those solutions will be sustainable. I've seen a lot of grant programs come out and wonderful programs happen. They dry up as soon as the grant money goes away. That's one thing Energy City is not asking the state for is any money. That's right. There's no money involved. What we hope to get out of state designation is recognition and credibility. With or without the state's designation, Energy City will go on because the city's committed, the county's committed, and the partners, the industrial and environmental partners in Energy City are committed. We hope you give it to us, and I think it will show that Elk River has always been number one for environmental excellence. and I think Minnesota wants to continue to be number one. We were originally about demonstrating technology, services, and products that were renewable energy and sustainable energy or energy efficient. We had some wonderful demonstrations. The school district alone, Ron Brantley is here from the school district. District 728, Elk River Area School District, was named as the national model for the United States Environmental Protection Agency's Sustainable School Project, large in part because they were an Energy City member. They also are one of 14 school districts to get the $42 million in the Clean Renewable Energy Grant. We've had even like the Elk River landfill. I mean, Elk River is close to the metro area. We're outside the Seven County metropolitan area, but we're close enough to dump on, if you will. And we took the landfill and actually made it an example of what to do with the landfill. It in 1998, it got the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Project of the Year for methane gas to electricity. A number of wonderful products, projects. We have a full-scale wind generator in Elk River, just so they can demonstrate that it, you know, it doesn't make a lot of noise and it's close. But all kinds of demonstrations in Elk River. We've been living this for 10 years. Elk River's put its heart and soul into this. We're moving on beyond demonstrations now. What we'd like to do next, and this is where I think there'd be a real service to the state, is to become the most energy-efficient city per capita in the state. That means educational programs to our citizens, innovative programs that can be transferable to other communities. And we will achieve that. And I think the state could be proud now and in the future to have Elk River as its energy city.
Thank you, Mr. Rolfe. I can see you guys have been doing a lot of work on this already and probably deserve that title. Though I'm curious now if maybe 10 years from now, say Rochester exceeds those qualifications and Senator Senjum comes up and says maybe we should be the state energy city. I mean, what kind of issues are we going to run into?
Energy city too.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, I can answer that. And for Senator Senjum, that was a good one. You can have Energy City 2, but the name's already protected.
You have to go to 3.
Energy City 3. If you want to have Monticello be Nuclear City. I mean, there's a lot of other options.
The other question I have, does this have anything to do with the competition between the pumpkin capital of the world? Isn't that Anoka?
Not at all. That, Anoka is the Halloween capital.
Halloween capital.
Halloween, okay.
Yes.
Any other questions from members? Okay, seeing none.
Mr. Chair,
oh, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to highlight that the landfill issue is you have 20% now of your homes are from the landfill, are fueled by the landfill methane.
Yes.
Almost 20%.
Producing the methane gas to electricity project is producing enough electricity to support electricity for 20% of the homes in the city of Elk River.
And 4 generators going off of the landfill.
There are currently and plans for more.
It's just, it truly is a model. If anyone gets a chance, it's a model.
Mr. Chair, members, there's also a refuse-derived fuel plant there.
Yes.
I don't know
started
if I'm
missing
anything
else. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. It was, we do have a long history of energy types of projects and things in the past. We are, City of Elk River was the site of the first rural nuclear electrical plant, atomic electrical plant. It was dismantled and it was taken out of the city, but we were the first one. Great River Energy is there now, the corporate headquarters. Before that, it was the United Power Association. They were in the city of Elk River, have been a resident there for many, many years. NSP came and sited their refuse-derived fuel plant, which takes garbage and makes it into RDF, which is then burned in Great River Energy's incinerators to make electricity. Now, of course, it's called NRG now. But it's still there. They are corporate partners in Energy City, as our GRE, Conexus, CenterPoint sits on as a commission member on the City of Elk River Energy Commission. You know, Steve, Mr. Chairman and committee members, Steve Rolfe mentioned this partnership that comes with what we have done in the City of Elk River. There was a group that was called Energy Alley here in Minnesota. And that also partnered business and environmentalists not as much government, but there was we sat on that Energy Alley as City of Elk River for several years, adding that governmental partner. But it seems as though when you take the environmentalists and you take the business part that's doing the production of electrical energy and energy in other ways, and also the government and partner that, there's a lot more that we can do with all of those pieces coming together than we can certainly do separately, or that we should be doing separately, because it gives us the ability to sit at the table and to think and to bring together some just amazing projects and really some great discussion that can bring out some solutions to the things that we're looking at today in the energy issue.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate you guys taking a proactive role on this. Any last comments?
Talk about,
sure. Mr. Rolfe.
On your comment that what if Rochester wanted to be Energy City, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if Elk River was such a wonderful place because of it that people were fighting over this designation
exactly.
In the future? Yeah. I want to point out one thing with corporate partners, too. Econar, I wasn't listening to the mayor, so I don't know if she mentioned this. I dozed off for
a
second.
He doesn't have to anymore.
I don't work for her anymore. So. But they're the largest geothermal manufacturer in the
yes.
Midwest. And their corporate offices are in Elk River. And Elk River Ford is also a corporate partner, a Ford dealership. They have about 60,000 square feet. And because of their relationship with Energy City, they're adding a 40,000 square foot expansion, and they're going to retrofit the 60,000 square foot and add to the 40,000 square foot new all geothermal. That's a half a dozen wind generators or more in that one building. So there's a lot of wonderful, exciting things going on in Elk River, and people are committed to this, not just the city and the county, but the corporate citizens and all of our citizens.
Seems to be catching fire. That's good. Anything else? Yeah. All right, Senator Jungbauer, would you like to move your bill?
I
believe it's going to the floor next. So
I would ask the committee to approve Senate File 252 and send it to the floor.
Senator Jungbauer moves that Senate File 252 be recommended to pass. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Your motion carries. Thank you, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Seeing no further business, our meeting is adjourned.